Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis. In the middle of the Amud we have the two dots, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Okay? Now, before Chof Aleph Amud Beis, Chof Aleph Amud Beis, right in the middle of the page you have the two dots. Before we move on, I just want to tie up a couple of loose ends from last time. Number one, regarding the pasuk that we saw, from where we derived that a minyan is 10 people, said, Mitoich b'nei Yisrael, v'niktashti b'soich b'nei Yisrael, I will be sanctified among the Jewish people. That exerus shove it to the pasuk that says, separate from among this bad Eida. That pasuk is not talking about the Meraglim. It's talking about Koirach, like you pointed out. It's talking about Koirach. The Gemara means etc. Meaning really, the Gemara elsewhere shows that it's a three pasuk Zerah Shava. There's another pasuk that says, Admosai la'eda ha'ro'a azois by the Meraglim. So it says Eida in these two places. It's Teich plus Teich equals Eida plus Eida. It's a three-step Zerah Shava, which brings us to the conclusion that a minion is 10 people. Okay. One point of halach. I'm sorry? So it's a shah springs. Oh, okay, good. One other point of halach alamaisa that I just wanted to bring out. We concluded last time that any davar shebikdusha has to be said with a minion. And therefore, kaddish, kedusha, etc., what has to be said with a minion? Now, something a little ambiguous here. First of all, what exactly is a davar shebikdusha? So we know, Kaddish, Kedusha, well, Mishabura adds Kriyas HaTaira, Baruch Hu, and basically the things we classically know go with a minion, Birkas Tayanim, all these things can only be done with 10 people. Why? Because that's a Davar Shebikdusha. What makes something a Davar Shebikdusha? If it's because you say Kaddish, so fine, Kaddish and Kedusha, that works for it. Shema, right? Learning Torah, everything. What makes something a davar shebikdusha and other things not? So simply understood, well, it's an issue of where you actually say kedusha. That will cover kaddish and kedusha. What about these other things? Baruch Hu, Kriyas HaTorah. Why are those more of a davar shebikdusha, Rabbeinu Yehuda asks, than Shema, for example? What's going on exactly? So Rabbeinu Yehuda Lamaisa says that it's a bit more technical. It's not really that there's something called davar shebikdusha and something that's not called davar shebikdusha. The idea is things that were instituted as the structure of a tzibur davening can only be done with a tzibur. Shema, which the Torah commands every individual to do, is no less of a sanctified activity than other things, than Kriyas HaTorah. Might be greater, right? But it wasn't instituted to be done with tzibur. That's really, it's kind of like a general expression. It wasn't instituted to be done with tzibur. Kriya Shema, right? Or davening, Shema Esrei. It's a chiyuv on every individual. The things that were instituted to be done with tzibur, we have a shita that says, nevertheless, a yochid can do it. But we rule, lemaisa, that no, a yochid should not do anything. The things that were instituted to be done with tzibur are to be done only with tzibur. But now, just two questions that the Pesach Lamaisa address. Lamaisa, at the end of the day, we say that to actually sanctify Hashem, in other words, in its most pure form, is Kadosh, 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 should only be done with tzibur. So we have to ask two questions. That's why Kedusha we only do with tzibur. What about Uvol Tzion? What about Uvol Tzion? You say Kadosh, 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 and Uvol Tzion as well. What about in Shachris, in the bracha of Yetzer Ar? Also you say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. What's with those? Do those have to be said only with tzibur?
But
after Asherah. Oh, that's right. So Uvol Tzion is the easiest answer. That no, because that is not even part of davening, really. You know what Uvol Tzion really is? Really what Uvol Tzion is, Chazal wanted to make sure you have a minimal learning seder every day. So they instituted Uvol Tzion. It's really learning the psukim. And that's why you actually say the Targum, you translate it in Aramaic, which we're all more familiar with. So,
Can we do that after the Torah?
What's that?
We have, you know, we say
that's kind of to be yoytze the Birkas HaTorah. And even that is questionable whether you really have to say it or not. L'maisa l'paskin that you do. But Chazal instituted every person has his Seder l'valitzim. So that's mamish just learning the psukim. It's nothing davening oriented. And therefore, you're not actually sanctifying Hashem. You're learning the psukim in the Navi that say those words. That's certainly okay. But where it gets questionable is what happens in the Kedusha of Yetzer Hara. There it's already not as clear. So it's a machloikis rishonim l'maisa. It's a machloikis. Some say that's a kedusha that said that tzibur, it's an instituted part of davening, we're actually being mikadesh, and therefore it should only be said with a minion. A person who's davening by himself, according to certain shitas, they say, you just skip it. You say, v'ayimrim kadesh, and then you move on to the next part. But it's a machloikis l'maisa. Other shitas say, no, this is also not really called kedusha because you're not actually saying it in your own right. You're relating what the malachim say. It's telling a story. You're not saying kaddish in your own capacity. You're telling a story. But kind of similar, yeah. Describing what the malachim do. What's that? Oh, but we'll see the kedusha itself. We'll see in a minute. So therefore, that's by Yuval Tzion. But what about in Shachris and Yetzer Har? That's certainly not just learning. That's instituted part of davening. So many places can say that no. Even as an instituted part of davening, all you're doing is describing what the malachim do. You're not being mikadosh yourself. Lamaisa it's a machloikis, and the Mishnah Berurah says essentially we follow the opinion that you can say it by yourself, and therefore Sidurim don't make note of this. But yet the Mishnah Berurah says, in order to cover the other opinion, when you are saying it by yourself, I think it's the Ramah actually, when you are saying it by yourself, try to say it with the proper trup. Try to say it with the proper trup so as to demonstrate, no, I'm mamish only saying it as reading what the malachim say. I'm not actually saying it on my own. So therefore, the Maisa, yes, you certainly say these things by yourself. If you can, say it with the trup, but that's not essential. Kedusha itself is a different story. In Kedusha we say Nikadesh Shimcha Ba'olam, or if you say Nusach Sfad Nakdishach Benaritzach, both are the same thing. We will now sanctify you in the same way the Malachim do. That's what you're saying, and therefore you actually say, and now I'm going to say, just like they say, I'm going to say what they're doing above, we're doing down here. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. This is certainly actually sanctifying Hashem. This can only be done in a minyan. Okay, that's just to tie up the sugya from the other day. I'm sorry? Yeah, right. Okay, we're going to begin the next sugya. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer. Mevarech lifneim ulaachareim. We're going to back up to the Mishnah. Back in the Mishnah we had said that a Baal Keri, a person who had a seminal emission, at that point in history was not allowed to daven or learn Torah or say anything Kedusha oriented. And therefore we said, you skip all of davening until you can get to the mikveh, but you think Kriya Shema, but nothing else. The brachas, before and after Kriya Shema, you don't even think, you just skip. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, you do make those brachas. So now we're going to get into a very interesting discussion, the whole concept of Baal Keri. Actually, even though it sounds not so relevant, it's a very fascinating subject. But before we do, we're going to start kind of through the back door. What is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion on this? We know that in general, there was a takana that a Baal Keri, a person who had a seminal emission, should not engage in davening, learning, etc. Rabbi Yehuda comes and says, make brachas as usual. Does he disagree with the whole concept? Let's see. So the Gemara says, Lemeimer dikosova Rabbi Yehuda. This implies that Rabbi Yehuda holds Baal Keri mutar b'divrei Torah. Then a Baal Keri on Chof Aleph Amud Beis, right in the middle of the Amud. that a Baal Keri is allowed to engage in Torah. How is that so? It seems pretty clear cut that he's not. Ve'omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Minayin le'Baal Keri she'asur b'divrei Torah. How do we know that a Baal Keri is not allowed to engage in Torah? Shenema. It says in the Pasuk, Zoidatom levonecho v'livnei vonecho. You shall teach the Torah to your children and to your grandchildren. V'samichle. And immediately afterwards it says, Yoyim ha'sha'amato lefnei Hashem alekecho b'choyriv. Like on the day that you stood before Hashem at Har Sinai. So we are actually linking our perpetual task of conveying the Torah further to standing at Har Sinai. In what sense? There's a halachic link here. Ma'alon balei keryon asurin. Just like at Har Sinai itself, Baal Keri was not allowed. Right? Hashem made sure to ensure that everybody, men and women, would be clean of keri by the time Matan Torah happened. Which mikveh? No, they weren't. I mean, Hashem said, well, what happened was, Hashem told them beforehand, make sure not to be with women. So they were all clean. Yeah, you're asking, were there any freak accidents? Apparently not. They were in such a state of awe at that time that didn't happen. But for 3 days beforehand, they kept away from women. Really, the purpose of that was to make sure the women were okay. Man doesn't need 3 days, he needs 1 day. But a woman also, after she has relations, anything that she emits afterwards, anything that she emits for the next 3 days, is considered a seminal emission on the part of the woman. So whatever it is, just like at Matan Torah, it was usur for a Baal Keri, Afkam Baal Keri and Asurin. So too, the perpetual task of conveying Torah, all Torah for all subsequent generations, a Baal Keri is excluded. So if so, we have a drasha telling us that Baal Keri should not engage in Torah learning. The Chitema. So what will you tell me? Rabbi Yehuda like Darish Smuchim. See, what drasha did we just implement here? We implemented a very unusual or less usual drasha called Smuchim. The fact that two psukim are next to each other implies that there's some halachic connection between the two. That is a drasha, a form of drasha that not everybody agrees with. So perhaps, we have a pasuk saying, talking about teaching Torah, and we have a pasuk talking about our Sinai, so it means the two go have the same rules. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda does not follow the drasha of smuchim, of adjacent psukim. So the chitema Rabbi Yehuda loidorish smuchim, maybe he doesn't hold of this drasha, and therefore he doesn't agree. No, Baal Keri is allowed to learn Torah. But Omar Rabbi Yosef said, afilu mandu loidorish smuchim mikol haTorah. We do know that there's a machloikis. There is a shita that does not follow this smuchim approach. Adjacent psukim don't necessarily, the juxtaposition of psukim doesn't necessarily have significance. But even the opinion that says that in all of Torah, b'mishne Torah darish, in Sefer Devarim he does. Meaning, yes, the drasha of smuchim is debatable in Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar. But in Devarim, everybody agrees to it. What's the difference? So, the Mepharshim explained that Devarim is what? Devarim is really a review of the Torah. And therefore, if Moshe Rabbeinu made a point of rearranging subjects, the fact that it's rearranged implies that there's significance. And therefore, we do take note of the position of Psukim in Devarim. But whatever it is, we're going to belabor the point a little bit. We're going to take our time showing that Rabbi Yehuda should agree with this drasha. But first, what we're going to do is just establish that yes, we have a shita that disagrees with smuchim in the rest of the Torah, but he does follow the drasha of smuchim in Devarim. Who's that? Rabbi Yehuda himself. Our Rabbi Yehuda. What's that? No, even if it was al pi Hashem, but the very fact that things were rearranged is significant. The fact that it was presented one way in the Torah and differently in Mishnah Torah is significant. So where do we find this idea? How do we see this? That yes, even the one who doesn't go with Smukim and the rest of the Torah does go in the Devarim. The Rabbi Yehuda himself, like Dorish Smukim and Korah Torah, he does not follow Smukim and the rest of the Torah. He does not hold of such a drasha. Meaning, we know that there are methods of drasha. This Gemara is introducing that there's a method of drasha that if one pasuk is next to the other, you're supposed to derive halachas one from the other.
Is that one of the 13 Rabbi Yishmael?
What's that?
Is that one of the 13 Rabbi Yishmael?
Smukim is not, to the best of my memory. Smukim is not. It's not. And it's another form of drasha that some agree with and some don't. So now, in the rest of the Torah, he does not go with it. Well, the Mishnah Torah Darish, but in Devarim we see that he does. So now we're really going to spell out each point before we actually get to our point. We're going to demonstrate this. We kind of got into a parenthetical discussion here. Smukin, right? We want to show that yes, we're going to establish that Rabbi Yehuda does not follow Smukin in the whole Torah, but he does in Devarim. So first we'll show instances in the rest of the Torah where he does not follow Smukin. The Korah Torah Kula Minolam Deloy Darish. How do we know that he does not follow Smukin in the rest of the Torah? Netanya says in the Braisa, Ben Azai Oimer, Nemar Mechashefa Loi Sechaya. It says, a witch, you shall not keep a witch alive. In other words, witch must be killed. But it doesn't say how you should kill her. How should we kill her? Electric chair? The Nema, huh? Broomstick, there you go. The Nema, so we don't know how you do it. The Nema, called Shechim and Behema Maisumas. But afterwards, the next pasuk says, anyone who cohabits with an animal should be put to death. Oh, some chayinion loy. The Torah puts these two one next to the other. Loyma, to teach us that Mashekhev and Behema Biskila, just like someone who cohabits with an animal is killed with skila, at Makshefa Nami Biskila, so too a witch is killed with skila. She's stoned to death. So, here we see Ben Azai is following Smukim, right? No indication as to what death penalty is applied to a witch. But since it's right next to a person who cohabits with an animal, we apply the same death penalty. They both get skila. They both get stoned. Omar loy Rabbi Yehuda, but here's our point. Rabbi Yehuda comes and objects. Rabbi Yehuda comes and objects. He says, no. What? You're going to stone this woman? You're going to stone this woman just because a pasuk nearby talks about stoning? You can't do that. That's not sufficient basis. Hello. Rather, there's a different source. Oivi Doini, how do we know? You're right. I agree with you that a witch is stoned. But not on basis of the fact that there are two psukim next to each other. That's no basis. There's a different source that a witch should be stoned.
Okay.
The Torah says in general that anyone who engages in sorcery should be put to death. Okay? Now, there are all kinds of fields in sorcery, right? Including oiv v'yidoini. Oiv and yidoini are two specific specialties in sorcery, right? One is the one who sticks a bone down his throat when he tries to make contact with a dead person. He sticks a bone down his throat, and that causes the dead person to speak from within his throat. That's one shita. Those who don't like to stick bones down their throats can take the idoini route. That's a different school. That you know, those the queasy can do this too. You take a bone and you put it in your underarm, and that brings up dead spirits. What's that? Don't know. What? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. So. So, the Torah says in a general way, anyone engages in sorcery has to be put to death. And then the Torah comes and says, Oy v'yidoyni, these two should be stoned. Now what does that teach us? It teaches us the following. Oy v'yidoyni b'klal kol ha'mechashvim hayom. Oy v'yidoyni were naturally included in the class of sorcerers. All sorcerers should be put to death. V'lama yatsu. Why were they singled out? This is a drasha, one of the 13 drashas. That if you have a generalization, and then the Torah specifies something about one of the members of that class, it's understood that you're supposed to apply it to the whole class. Not quite. This is the Dabar Shaya B'Klal, the Yotzam in Achlal. Let's take our case. Torah says, all sorcerers should be put to death. That's a general classification, all sorcerers. Then the Torah comes in and gets a little more specific with regard to one sorcerer. Or in this case, two. Oyven Yidoini, all sorcerers should be put to death. Then the Torah says, Oyven Yidoini should be stoned. So now, since the Torah is providing specifics about one of the members of that general classification, right? Like here, they were all included in the general classification of sorcerers, and now the Torah comes and provides us with more specific information. It's an example, exactly. It's understood as an example, and it's applied to the whole class. So therefore, Lama Yatsu, why are they singled out? La Hakishlam, V'loy Malacha. So that we can compare all the other sorcerers to these two, and to tell you, Ma oivid oini viskila, just like oivid oini are stoned, af machshefa viskila, so to all other sorcerers, including our friendly witch, they are all stoned. So that's the source. And what did we want out of all this? We want one point. We see that Rabbi Yehuda objects to the drush of smuchim. He did not want to stone the witch on basis of smuchim. Rather, he derived it from a different drasha, the drasha of Dabar Shaya B'Klal, that you have the Torah singling out something that was already in the general classification. So, we've really just built our first block here. Rabbi Yehuda does not go with smuchim in the rest of the Torah. Now, however, Obe Mishneh Torah Minal and the Darish, yet as we said before, he does go with smuchim in the Dvarim. Where do we find that he does go with smuchim in Dvarim? Netanya. It says in the Braisa. We're really spreading across Shas here. Rabbi Eliezer Oimer. We know that the halacha is that you are not allowed to marry your stepmother, your father's wife, even if she's no longer married to your father.
Even if he's dead?
Yeah. She turns into an erva. Stepmother is an erva, never becomes permitted. The same goes for a daughter-in-law. A man can never marry his daughter-in-law, even after his son's death. Daughter-in-law is an inherent erva that stays forever prohibited. Now, how does that work in extramarital situations? What happens if someone's father violated a woman?
While they're still married?
What's that?
While they're still married? While they're still married to the woman?
No. His father violated a stranger. Now the son decided, hey, my father had good taste. He wants to marry her. Can he marry a woman who his father violated?
It was znus. It wasn't a man.
It was znus. Yeah, znus. Or the other way around.
He'd
a teenager.
Be a Makayan.
What's that?
If they
have that intent. But let's say they didn't. And they did it privately by themselves. There were no witnesses, no nothing. There was no kiddush. It was pure znus. What?
Doesn't have to be Erev at that point.
Oh, so that's the question. Can a person marry a woman whose father had zlus relations with? Or can a person marry a woman who his son had zlus with? So let's see. Rabbi Eliezer, Oimer. Noi say Adam anusas aviv umefutas aviv. One is allowed to marry a woman who his father raped or seduced. Anusas b'nai, mufutas b'nai, or a woman who his son raped or seduced. Meaning, yes, if a man's father or son had znus with a woman, that does not prohibit her to the relatives. It's nothing. Rabbi Yehuda oise b'anusas ovim mufutas ovim. Rabbi Yehuda says no. You cannot marry a woman whom your father had znus with. Now, what's the source for this? Ba'omar Avgidl Amar Rav. Avgidl said in the name of Rav, my time at Rabbi Yehuda. What's Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning? Why does he prohibit this? Diksev, because it says in the pasuk, Vayikach ishes eishes avi. A man should not take his father's wife. Fine, that's clearly talking about his father's wife. But then the Torah adds a clause. He should not reveal his father's what his father revealed. What's this addition coming to teach us? There's no repetition in the Torah. What's this addition coming to teach us? Any rogue, if we'll call it that, right? That his father uncovered, he should not uncover. Meaning, even an unmarried woman who his father had relations with, he should not. From where do we get that this is referring to his father's, a woman who his father violated? Because the next pasuk says, pasuk right near that says, the pasuk right next to that is talking about rape. And it says, it talks about all the halachas of rape, and then it says that a person should not marry his father's wife or a woman who his father was with. So we understand that it's talking about, since the pasuk right next door is talking about rape, here also it's talking about rape. So if so, that a person is not allowed to marry a woman who his father raped. So if so, you see that this is Rabbi Yehuda, even though he does not follow the smuchim in the rest of Torah, here in Zvarim he does go with smuchim to interpret the pasuk that says don't reveal what your father revealed to be referring to a woman who his father raped. Okay, so what do we want out of all this? All this was really just coming to show that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in Zvarim we follow smuchim. If Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in Zvarim we follow smuchim, then he should agree with our drasha that a balkari is not allowed to engage in Torah, because that was also based on smuchim in Devarim. It says you should teach Torah right next to the pasuk that talks about Har Sinai. We should say that it's linking the two, just like Har Sinai balkari was not allowed to be at, so too a balkari is not allowed to engage in Torah. So why does Rabbi Yehuda not go with that? So the shayla is, what's that referring to? What's that? No, there are others who interpret it not even as that. Others interpret it as Shemeres Yavam Shalom. Like it could be that it's not even talking about someone who his father had relations with. It's talking about someone who is associated with his father in some way. The question is what? So, yes, we have a good question. Why does Rabbi Yehuda not hold of the Isser of Bali Keri to learn Torah? Mara answers, "Mi boyleli idach the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi." You're right. He does expound those smuchim, but for a different purpose. For the other drasha that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, he gave an alternative. Dama Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, "Kol amelamed libnoi Torah." Anyone who teaches his son Torah, male alav akosuv kilu kiblo me'achoyrim. It's as though he received it from Har Sinai. Shenemar, as it says in the Torah, You shall teach it to your sons and to your grandsons. And right afterwards it says, on the day that you stood before Hashem at Choyrev. So yes, we are connecting teaching Torah to Har Sinai, but not in that sense, not in regard to Bali Keri, but rather in the sense that a person who teaches his offspring Torah, it's as though they received it from Har Sinai.
What does that mean?
What's that?
What does that mean?
Really what the Torah is expressing here is that the classic, optimal form of Torah is tradition.
A story, man?
Yeah.
It's optimal or it's not optimal?
No, that's the ultimate form. That's the most optimal form. And therefore, yes, Torah is meant to be conveyed through that live chain. Through that live chain. Torah is not meant to be. It's like we've said quite a number of times. The Jews are called the people of the book. That's a misnomer to a big extent. We aren't really the people of the book. We're a people who have a lot of books, but that's not our definition. We are the people of tradition. It's a live tradition. Torah is not meant to be gleaned out of, excuse me, putting it this way, dead texts. I mean, not alive. It's meant to be conveyed through live lessons. It's a very big part of the whole weight that the Torah carries, that it's a live, unbroken chain from the earliest of times. We don't know Torah from books. We have books that help the tradition move along, but we know Torah because it's been conveyed live ever since Har Sinai. I'm sorry? Torah Shebaal Peh. That's actually the main Torah is Torah Shebaal Peh. Avraham says the Torah Shebiksav is intended merely to help anchor Torah Shebaal Peh. Otherwise it might, you know, it's a basis for Torah Shebaal Peh, but really it's about Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay. I always felt that there was something wrong with the expression the people of the book, but I felt funny about that because if it's such a common expression, it's a tradition, exactly. It's a live tradition, we're called people of the book. But then I found that I was in good company, because the Baruch Ber Leibovich once expressed his disapproval at a sefer that used the expression the people of the book, that called the Jewish people the people of the book. So his son-in-law, Reb Reuven Grozovsky, said to him, he said, how can you say that? The sefer Kuzari uses the term. So Baruch Ber replied off the cuff. He said, look again. In the sefer Kuzari, it's a dialogue between the king of Kuzar and the Jewish sage. He says it's not the Jewish sage who uses the expression, it's the king of Kuzar who uses the expression. Okay. But I'll concede that we certainly are a people that value books exceedingly. The right books. Okay. Tanan. So whatever it is, where do we stand now? Where we stand now is that, yes, it's true. Rabbi Yehuda does not hold up the whole issur of about Keri to learn Torah. He takes the psukim in a different direction. Now, I just want to note something before we move on. The way the Gemara seems to be presenting it now, what does he do with the psukim, what does he do with the psukim, it seems that actually the issur of about Keri is the Araisa. Right? It's learned from psukim. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees because he derives something else from those psukim. So it appears that the Isser of Balkari is the Araisa. So the Rishayim say, no, that's clearly not so, as we can see from the Gemara itself. We see two different alternatives of how to expound this pasuk, right? Now, is it two different sources expounding it in different ways? Both expositions were presented by Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi expounded the pasuk in both ways. You certainly can't do that with a real drasha. They say, obviously, we're talking about an asmachta here. It's an asmachta. It's certainly the constant, the issur of a balkari to engage in Torah is a takana, it was instituted by Ezra, as we'll see as we go along. It's an asmachta, this psukim that we're citing here. Okay. What's that? Well, it means the two of them. It's as though it was conveyed straight from Harsinai. Yeah. The process. Exactly. That's why Rabbi Shimon Levi does both. Meaning, that's what the Rishonim infer. Okay, we're discussing which direction does Rabbi Yehuda go. But let's note there was Rabbi Shimon Levi who said both. Right? So obviously it's an asmachta, and the Gemara just isn't really getting into that. We're just asking, does Rabbi Yehuda really disagree? And the answer is no, he doesn't really disagree. Right. Okay. Fine. But the Gemara is going to continue to question that. Tanan. Actually, sorry. What time is it? What's the time? 9:15. Oh, okay. So now the Gemara says, we're still not comfortable with this understanding that Yehuda disagrees with the whole Isra of Balkari. It's too established a concept for someone to disagree with. So tonight, we're going to try to disprove that. And this is a very interesting question. As we're going to see soon, the concept of Balkari is very interesting. Because the Chachamim took Keri, or Ezra, took Keri and treated it more severely than all of the other Tumas in the Torah. Right? We have Tumas in the Torah that are much more severe. In fact, even more than that. Tmei Nes, Zav, Mitzayra. In fact, even more than that, the truth is that Balkari, in a sense, is the lightest form of Tumah that there is in the Torah.
Where did the Balkari go? What part of the camp did he go in?
What's that?
What part of the camp was he allowed in?
Balkari is just not allowed to enter the actual Machane Shechina. So now, yet Ezra came and turned everything upside down. He went and treated Balkari more severely than all the other Tumas of the Torah. Azav and Mitzayrah, Tmei Nes, they can all learn Torah. Balkari not. Certain paradox here. Why that is, we'll see soon. But whatever it is, you can have a very interesting situation where a person, what are we saying? A Tmei Nes, a Zav, a Mitzayra. Go ahead, you're welcome to give Shir. But a Balkari, oh no. Now, the truth is that often these Tumas can encompass Balkari. Like, let's say, for example, what do we say? Balkari has to go to the mikveh before he can learn Torah. He has to purify himself. But now let me ask you about a funny situation. You have a person who's a Tmei Nes, the epitome of Tumah. Okay? Now he knows that he's Tameh for another week. There's nothing to talk about, right? Now, became a Tmei Nes on Sunday, he's got till next Sunday, right? On Wednesday, he becomes a Balkari. Okay? Now what are you going to tell him? You have to go to the mikveh. You're a Balkari. What go to the mikveh? I'm a Tmei Nes. You go as a Balkari, I'm not achieving any purity. But on the other hand, as a Tmei Nes, you're allowed to learn Torah. As a Balkari, you're not. But on the third hand, but going to the mikveh is meaningless in such a situation. Right? So we create a certain catch 22. Like, what are you supposed to do? You are going to go to the mikveh. It seems ridiculous. You're not going to go to the mikveh. You're a Balkari. How can you learn? So how do we treat such a situation? So let's see. Zav Shiral Keri. A Mishnah addresses exactly this. The Mishnah says Zav, you have a Zav, he's coming now for a week. Shiral Keri. And he had a seminal emission. The nida shepolto shichva zera. Or if you have a nida, right? A woman can become a balkari also, as we explained. If she had relations with her husband and then she emits his semen.
No, but a woman could be a nida
and relationship. Oh, so it shouldn't happen, but it could happen. Meaning, let's say they were shoygin. She was a nida, and she had relations.
She's a balkari. Why does it matter if she's nida or not? Why would when she's not nida would also transfer? Why is it only in the nida status?
No. Nida shouldn't necessarily make her a balkari. But let's say a woman was a nida. She's coming out for a week. And then she became a balkari. The truth is it can happen in legitimate situations also. Woman had relations with her husband on Sunday. She became a nida on Monday. and then she emitted his semen on Tuesday. So she became a nida, and afterwards she had what we call a female seminal emission. Okay? Now she becomes a Balkari. She's not allowed to learn Torah, not allowed to daven.
How is she supposed to know?
What?
How is she supposed to know that she becomes... Meaning, she has a question so funny. How is she supposed to know that she did
not have a... No, it comes out. If stuff comes out of her body. So now... Or Hamishameshes Vera Sodam, or the opposite case. A woman actually was with her husband and emitted the keri, so she became a balas keri, and then she became an eda. So in all these situations, is there any purpose in the balkari going to the mikveh? Right now, he's a balkari, she's a balkari, he's a balkari. But they've got a much more severe tumma that they're not going to become purified from anyways for the next week. So is there any purpose in going to the mikveh? Tzrichim tevila. Yet, the Tanakhama says they have to go to the mikveh. Because again, you're right, on the Doraisa level, this keri is just meaningless. It's swallowed up by the bigger tumma. But on the rabbinic level, as the Avi learning Torah, the more severe tumma is meaningless. It's nothing. While the keri does prevent you from learning Torah. So yes, you have to go to the mikveh. Yeah. So the airport, yes, you have to go to the mikveh.
Why would they make such a big deal out of the Torah? Why is he not making a bigger deal of what the Torah makes?
Oh, we'll see. That we'll get to soon. Well, probably not today anymore, but we'll get to that. Sorry? Right, as we'll see. Well, we'll see how specific that is to the rest of us, but we'll see. Now, so he says, yes, I know you're more tamei, and I know that the mikveh is not going to purify you, but you got to go anyways for purposes of Torah and davening. You have to purify yourself from the keri. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, in such a situation, you don't have to go to the mikveh.
Terrible men?
Because you're, what?
Terrible men?
Men or women?
No, women learning.
What's that? Well, women would learn the things that are relevant to them. Or davening. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, in such a case, going to the mikveh is meaningless. You're much more tamei anyway, so forget about it. Now, we infer, at kan loy potter Rabbi Yehuda, ela bezav shorah keri. Rabbi Yehuda, what's he saying? He's saying, in this situation, where you have a zav, right? And he's also about keri, just forget about the keri. To make karalav batvilu, because anyways, you're not going to become pure by going to the mikveh. Then he says you're exempt. Avo balkari greider, but the implication clearly is that a regular balkari, what's Rabbi Yehuda saying? In this situation, you're not going to become tar anyways, so skip it. But the implication is that a regular balkari, mechayev, he would require him to go to the mikveh. So if so, the implication is Rabbi Yehuda does agree with the Takana that a Balkari has to go to the mikveh. So if so, how can our Mishnah say, how can he just say in our Mishnah that a Balkari can make all brachas as usual? So, we're going to leave this up in the air for right now, and we'll continue next time, Bezos Hashem. We'll... Right, okay, I guess I don't have to say... We're on for Sunday, but we're obviously off for Tuesday. And then back on Thursday, business session.
Monday as well.
What's that?
Recently, yeah.